2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Welcome to Taco's Fast 40, Atlanta edition, the fastest 40 of all of the intermediate tracks. We are headed to Atlanta, and it is going to be a very, very wet Sunday race. In fact, this race might not even race in its entirety. We are currently looking at about a 25 to 35% chance of a completed official race, and that means that there's about a 75 to 65% chance that we have some fun with this slate. It could either be postponed until Monday, or we could just finish half of the race if we get to stage two by the time all of the weather comes into effect and it starts raining. Then we will call it early. We could have another situation like Pocono a few years ago, where the race gets called over halfway through, and if they just so happen to be through a pit cycle or something like we saw then, we could have a very strange winner. If you recall, Chris Buescher won that race. It was the only race that he's ever won, and Brian Scott finished third in that race as well. Made for some very, very strange cast lines, that's for sure. So this week is going to be a game theory challenge in which you really have to decide how am I going to be attacking this thing. Do you focus more on just playing the safest of safe plays, or do you try to just pivot off of ownership and let other people make mistakes, or just let the high-owned drivers, who are going to be very, very high-owned drivers, fall where they may? There are going to be less laps, most likely, unless it gets postponed into Monday and they finish the full race then. Or I guess it would be Tuesday, because it's supposed to rain all Monday as well. But we could have an entire race, we could only have half of a race. We could have a completely postponed race and get all of our entries back. We don't know what's going to happen. So really, this week is a bit of a wild card. I know last week was the ultimate wild card, the Daytona 500. This race, if it weren't for the weather that's going to play a major factor here, it would be a fairly predictable race. One stat that I thought stuck out to me was, despite the fact that this field is the smallest field in all of NASCAR with only 36 drivers this year. Last year, there were 37 drivers. And that means this week, newcomer Harrison Rhodes taking over the 51 Chevy for Rick Ware Racing, who would almost be a shoo-in for last place. He's going to finish 36th at worst and score 8 fantasy points. So that's a bit higher of a floor than we are used to. That's like the absolute floor for the last place starting guy. Being able to start at 8 points and move up kind of make you a little bit more viable of a play. And when looking at the data, outside of plate races, this is the track where guys who are starting in the back actually put up the most average fantasy points of any other race outside of plate races. And that was unique to me. I thought that that number would come from a short track or something like a road course, but nope. Guys starting 35th or worse average about 24 fantasy points here at Atlanta. And the pole sitter averages 75 fantasy points, and that would be the fifth highest mark in all of NASCAR, with the average amount of laps led being 126 average laps led for the pole sitter, only behind Darlington, who's way out in front there. Like, you always play the pole sitter at Darlington. Outside of that, you really do want to play the pole sitter at Atlanta. This week, however, it is very interesting because usually that pole sitter would be last year's pole sitter, Kevin Harvick, who just dominates this track, averages well over 100 lead laps per race. He won't be starting on the pole. That will be Kyle Busch. And then we have Martin Truex Jr., the king of 1.5-mile ovals. He will be starting in almost dead last, making him pretty much a must play. And that's sort of the name of this slate. Outside of the rain, it's about, there are like four or five guys up near the very top that you almost like need. You know, Truex starting in the back, Harvick, who historically dominates here, Kyle Busch starting on the pole, Chase Elliott starting back in 27th, even Jimmy Johnson starting in 22nd, Ryan Blaney starting 26th. There are lots of options this week. We are not going to have the 50-way ties of the Xfinity race that just ended. And to summarize that real quickly, Kevin Harvick. Yeah. We'll talk about when we get to him. But, it is worth mentioning that the Domination Station, the optimal lineup that was put out there, that did end up finishing first in GPPs. It was the nuts lineup, and Army members everywhere cashed 4 billion way ties. Gotta hate the small tournaments in the Xfinity series. Even crushing it there doesn't give the biggest dividends, but we're going to try to continue to keep the fire going in the Domination Station into this NASCAR race. But like last week, you have to consider the fact that this is a very high variance week. I recommend playing no more than half of what you would normally allot for a race like this. I know this is supposed to be the race where we can start playing cash games again, but no, don't play cash games when there's just all of this variance and unpredictability of the circumstances or what's going on. I mean, this is kind of like a GPP multi-entry only slate, unless you want to make a very bold call and play a very specific strategy, just based on, you know, whatever goes on. But anywho, back to the track here. This is the fastest oval outside of Charlotte. They will be averaging about 155 miles per hour around this track. Usually at 1.5-mile tracks, we see that average speed anywhere between 130 to 140. But Atlanta is quite fast. It is a quad oval, and it was last repaved in 1997, so tire wear is going to be a bit of an issue. We saw on restarts in the Xfinity race, Harvick had fresh tires on one restart, and he just absolutely flew past everybody. He was gone. Tires matter here a whole lot. They only have a set number of tires that they'll be using, so on top of everything, there'll be a lot of pit strategy calls to be made if this race does end up going farther. And theoretically, some cars may want to use up like a bunch of their tires, hoping that the race is canceled or something early. So other teams may want to hold out. There's no real telling, you know, who's going to employ what strategies or whatnot. The only thing that I can extrapolate from all of this is that variance is going to be at not an all-time high. I mean, it's not going to be as high as like at a restrictor plate race, but there's going to be a lot more variance than we're used to seeing at Atlanta. And this is usually a very, very relaxed, chill race. It averages about 13% of the race run under caution, which is pretty low compared to, you know, obviously races like last week where like 30% of the race was raced under caution. A very mild week as far as like DNFs and crashes go. The average green flag run will run for about 44 laps. That is the second longest average green flag run of any racetrack on the NASCAR circuit. We're going to be seeing lots of laps led racked up by the pole sitter or whoever's out in front, barring the unforeseen. And if this race does happen to finish all of the laps, which again likely isn't going to happen, chances are that's not going to happen, but if it does, there will be 243 dominator points up for grabs, which is on the higher end of that mark. It's not crazy like a short track like Bristol or something that has 500 laps, but there are 325 laps in this race. And if things were to go normally, This would be pretty par for the course as far as 1.5 miles go. Maybe you would focus a bit more, obviously, on the pole sitter and the dominators. And the dominators would dominate more. There's a lot. It's a lot less likely to be split as far as the dominator points go. They will mostly go to one guy, maybe one or two guys, but that's about it. But if theoretically half of the dominator points could be wiped out of the slate, I keep going back to finishing position. I know that place differential is important, but this is actually the track where place differential is the least important. Absolute least important, because it is the smallest field of the entire year. Only 36 drivers. There's not much place differential to be had, especially with a lot of very obvious drivers starting from the back. You're going to have some guys that are cheaper, maybe in the 6K range, that are starting in the 20s or so, and their upside is going to be just nuked because they're going to immediately get passed by guys behind them like Blaney, Elliott, Truex, Jimmy Johnson. They're going to fly right past them, and the initial value plays are going to be going backwards a little bit, at least to begin. And you really want to just shoot for making the best possible lineups that you can. When looking at finishing position, you want the guys who will finish as high at, well, I guess as low as possible, while of course considering place differential and things like that. But really a lot of these plays are kind of made for you because qualifying was so wonky. So, well, let's get into the field here. We've got three drivers over $10,000, Martin Truex Jr., Kevin Harvick, and Kyle Larson. Starting with Martin Truex Jr., he is the most important play on this slate. It's really easy to just say all in Truex Jr., very easy. Because that's really all the thinking you really need to put into it. If he crashes or has a problem, that's going to be the reason he doesn't make value. Starting 35th at a 1.5-mile track where he just absolutely crushed the field last year, looking at driver ratings at 1.5-mile tracks, Kevin Harvick was the second best last year with 117 driver rating, which was significantly better than the third best, Kyle Busch at 105 driver rating. But Martin Truex Jr., a wicked 131 driver rating at 1.5-mile speedways last year. Many, many wins. I think he took down, what was it, seven? I think he won seven of them last year, the 1.5-mile tracks. Didn't lead a ton of laps. Only 103 laps per race. Eh, that was nothing. Only 50 fast laps per race. Yeah, those numbers just dwarf everyone around him. We saw Harvick average about 60 lead laps and 30 fast laps. So Truex, his car refused to pass inspection. His rear window wanted to be a little bit low, and they didn't like that. The new 3D scanner was quickly on him, but as long as he passes race day inspection, he's going to be fine. Second fastest in happy hour practice earlier today. Fifth fastest in the 10 lap speeds. He's going to be perfectly fine. Now, he is going to be extremely high owned, over 60%. And I like either just going overweight on that or going all in and saying screw it. Or just going equal to the field and letting your other plays separate you. I think that is going to be the way to go with Truex. I mean, you just want to play him optimally. Doesn't matter how well he's done at Atlanta or whatever. Starting 35th doesn't matter. You just want to play him. Kevin Harvick, $10,100. He just absolutely crushed in the Xfinity Series at Atlanta once again. He now has five of the top seven. over the last seven races, he has five of the top seven fantasy point scores. Of the past six races at Atlanta, five of his finishes have posted five of the top seven fantasy point outputs for Xfinity. So Harvick, he was pretty obvious there. But for the Cup race, he also just absolutely smashes it at Atlanta. Averages 146 lead laps. 50 lead laps. compare it to Truex. He only averages about 7 lead laps. He really hasn't dominated here, but that's not even why you're playing Truex. For Harvick, you're playing him for these dominator points. He's going to find a way to get out in front. He couldn't have put on a better showing in Xfinity today. His pit crew was just putting out pit stops that none of the other teams could even come close to comparing to. He's seconds faster than other people in the pits, and I mean, that was the bane of his existence a couple of years ago going to the playoffs that arguably cost him a championship. Nice to see the pit crews working with there do very well. In practice, he was not fast in the second practice, only 23rd in fast laps, or fastest lap, but 10 lap speeds, he was 7th, and almost the entire field put out 10 lap speeds for the happy hour practice, so we'll be able to use those numbers and focus on them a lot. We did see in the Xfinity race that ownership was almost identical to like practice time, so practice times are going to create a lot of chalk. But in here in the NASCAR Cup Series, the chalk is going to be made quite obvious for us just by how qualifying was. So as far as ownership goes, it really is about finding some sneaky kind of pivot plays here, but it's also about not being dumb this week, I think. Unless you want to just take a really contrarian stance and hope that the race gets ended in a strange way or something. I mean, there are lots of ways to skin a cat this week, that is for sure. Kyle Larson is the last $10,000 guy, and that's how much he cost, $10,000. Was second quick in first practice, but second practice is going to be more important for us this week. This happy hour practice is at a time that's going to be similar to the time that we will be racing, possibly. Who knows? We could be racing Monday night, and you know how asphalt tracks are. They're not like concrete where the track is kind of the same throughout the day. The track will change significantly as we go into the night. So if there are any delays or the race is raced at a different time of the day, who really knows with these cars? Just adds more variance to the mix. But Kyle Larson, he finished second here last year, but he's never done great at Atlanta outside of that. Only an average driver rating of 82. Compare that to Harvick's 126. But he was very good at 1.5 mile tracks last year. He's just one of the most talented drivers, if not the most talented driver in NASCAR. The second practice, of course, a lot slower than that first one. First practice, we saw some pretty wonky things. I mean, we did see a couple of guys overperform in the second practice, but the first practice was a little bit nuts. Guys like Bowman and Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Darrell Wallace Jr., Ty Dillon, these guys were posting like top five practice speeds. I care a lot more about the second practice here, and he kind of went back to earth and a little bit farther than that. 19th quickest is not great for Kyle Larson at all, but there is a merit to this play, and the merit being he is going to have no ownership at all. He is going to be incredibly low owned, because you've got Kyle Busch right there, Kevin Harvick right there, Martin Truex Jr. right there. These three are going to absorb all of the ownership in the world. We could see Kyle Larson in the teens with his ownership. No one is going to play the guy starting eighth, and if he goes out there and starts leading laps, which he can do at about any track. He's only led a couple laps at this track, but at any given track, Kyle Larson is good enough to put his nose out in the lead, especially if he does anything special in the pits or runs any sort of alternative pit strategy. Kyle Larson could pay huge dividends as an extremely low-owned play. Just based on how salary and the values work out this week, Larson is going to be the forgotten man here. So in GPP, I love him as a pivot play off of Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, Martin Truex Jr. It's just hard not to absolutely love this chalk this week. Kyle Busch is starting on the pole, $9,700. He's tied with Harvick as the Vegas favorite, or at least he was. They pulled the odds before the Xfinity race. We'd figure that Harvick would probably push himself out to the favorite. We see the lines come back later in the day, and we'll probably see Harvick posted at about a 3-1 or so, 4-1. But Kyle Busch has been a monster at these intermediate tracks for a while now. He was one of the big three last year of Larson, Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr. Since Harvick was struggling a little bit last year, he just wasn't putting himself out there like those three were to make them out to be the big three, but I would argue that by the end of the year, they had become the big four, with Harvick doing so well at the 1.5-mile tracks, just consistently leading laps and stuff. So these four are going to be the most likely to dominate, for sure. For sure. These are basically all the guys you're looking at as far as dominating this race, outside of maybe some Penske guys. But Kyle Busch starting on the pole, he's going to lead however many laps he leads until Harvick catches him. Not sure if that's 5 laps or 200 laps. The pole sitter has done very well here historically. Remember, only the Darlington pole sitter has done better, and that is kind of a fluky track right there, the little egg-shaped track. It's the only one we have. But Kyle Busch, he's going to be over-owned being on the pole, like we always see with guys that are starting on the pole. He has won here back in 2013. I could easily see him leading just a bunch of laps and holding off Harvick for a while, but I don't see him holding him off the entire time. The thing I do like about this play, though, is that he's almost guaranteed some lead laps. And if this race is only raced halfway, I could definitely see Kyle Busch being that guy that you need. But if he runs, of course, if he runs into any problems, he has the most to lose. He could still score about negative 30 fantasy points here if anything were to happen to him. So you don't go all in on him, obviously. For a pole sitter, he's going to be low owned. It's very rare that you see two or three guys projected higher in ownership than the pole sitter, especially when it's Kyle Busch, because Kyle Busch is very popular. But Kevin Harvick, Martin Truex Jr., and Ryan Blaney are in such good spots that it's even Chase Elliott starting 27th. I don't know if he'll be owned. I don't think he'll be higher owned than Kyle Busch, but he'll get there. And that's why you're seeing this ownership just spread out. You need to spend on the top two guys, Martin Truex Jr. and Kevin Harvick, with Chase Elliott being right there starting in 27th, and people thinking, you know, people wanting to get off of Larson for the historical dominator here in Harvick. Or not Larson, I got the Kyles messed up, Kyle Busch, but we could see a pole sitter under 40% owned, and for Kyle Busch being that guy, that's very strange, but the practice times that most people look at, the first and second speeds in practice, 20th and 15th, not too hot, but second fastest in 10 lap speeds, only behind his teammate Denny Hamlin. I like how the Toyotas are going for that long-term speed. You do see Truex there in 5th as well. And I'm trying to be more on Toyota this week. Obviously, everyone was way off of them last week, but this is where you'd want to hop off of Ford a little bit and jump onto Toyota. This is where they're supposed to make their big their first big statement here of the year at the ovals, which they have historically done a lot better at than plate races. Kyle Busch, though, I do think he does drop off. I don't think he's winning this thing, and I don't think he's going to dominate like tons either. I do see Harvick catching him. He's not going to go without the lead for too long. You could definitely play him a good amount and hope it gets canceled early or something, and he just so happens to lead the first amount of laps, and then by the time that Harvick takes over, you know, he's already made his value. Or you could even play him and Harvick together, honestly. That would work out just fine. It would just be hard to fit Martin Truex Jr. in at that point. You would really need to have a superstars and scrubs lineup. So it seems like you're either playing him or Kevin Harvick along with Truex, and you're kind of making a choice there. Then you also might have to fade the likes of Chase and Jimmy Johnson. I mean, that's what makes this week so interesting and fun. You will be seeing a lot of like studs and scrubs lineups, as these top value guys are just going to be oh so important. All right, going down to Chase Elliott, $9,500, starting 27th. Super safe cash gameplay. However, his practice times were hot garbage, 29th and 28th, 10 lap speeds, not any faster either, 18th overall out of like 30. Just no, not, the practice times are not there. Something is a bit amiss with these Chevys. A few of them seemed really slow. William Byron also looked very slow in final practice. You also saw the Fords some of the Fords, like the Penske crew, like Keselowski's Ford, not looking too hot in practice, but starting 27th, though, that's still too low. He's finished top 10 both of his races here, average driver rating of 105. He's always done very well on these 1.5-mile tracks. The only concern here is practice times, and that's just going to lower his ownership more than it's already going to be lowered. I like Chase. I'm not going to worry about it whatsoever. There's no way he's going to stick back in 27th. And he's going to have half the ownership of Truex. So, theoretically, could make for a pivot off of him. But again, you would be rooting straight up for Truex to crash or have a problem still. It's just hard that you would have to fade Truex most likely in order to fit in Chase Elliott here if you want to play a Harvick or a Kyle Busch. That's where it gets tricky. I would like to play Chase Elliott, but it really is hard to see myself using a ton of him. Denny Hamlin was fastest in the 10-lap speeds and really had fast practices overall. $9,300. He really doesn't like Bubba Wallace now, I guess. Him and Bubba Wallace had a bit of a falling out. So you'll hear that brought up on the coverage, I'm very sure. Hasn't done well at Atlanta. He has not been hot here. 3 38th place finishes in the last 5 years. Just some bad luck. A third in 2014. I like jumping off of that. The problem is the practice times aren't going to send people his way. No doubting that, so I don't think he's going to be this insanely low-owned guy. But he's still not going to garner a ton of ownership starting 12th, with Chase Elliott starting 27th right there. So it could be someone to attack, and moving from 12th to 1st will still probably do you. That'll definitely put you in the winning lineup. Especially if he leads or dominates any of these laps, which he has before, back in 2014, or I think in 2015, he was out there leading before he had crashed. Hamlin, I don't know, just a GPP only sort of play, starting 12th. I like him. Him and Logano kind of look very similar to me in this range here, and I'll get to him, but I basically like him off, or as a solid pivot off of these chalk guys, but again, hard not to play these chalk guys. Brad Keselowski, another guy, slow and loose in practice. He's the defending winner of this race in top 10 the last 3 years, crashed times before that. Starting 5th place, he could dominate. I could see him going out and dominating to the tune of some really low ownership. He's sort of like a Kyle Larson style play, but $9,200, that is quite cheap for him. The crash last week must have factored into his pricing a little. I'm not sure. He's the defending winner here, but he's only $9,200. Just a bit off to what we're usually seeing Keselowski at. 12-1 odds to win aren't hot. I mean, you know that Ford wasn't really dominating a ton of these 1.5-mile tracks last year outside of maybe Blaney. I mean, Keselowski had his moments, but he won this race, but he wasn't dominating. He'd snuck in at the end after Harvick dominated the whole race. And that's probably the scenario in which I would see him winning this one. Definitely not high on Keselowski starting 5th. I really don't see him dominating over Kyle Busch or over Kevin Harvick. I just don't really see that happening. I don't think a lot of people will see that happening. If you play a bunch of him, you will get him at low ownership, but chances are he's just not going to do a whole lot for you, and then you won't even get the leverage there because no one else has him either. Joey Logano I like a lot more. 16th starting position. He's at $9,000 even, which is nice. He has a very, very good driver rating here, second only behind Kevin Harvick at 111. Average finish of 7th, just hasn't crashed here. That's what that tells you for the most part. And he has some good finishes. Runner-up back in 2013. Always finish, or average running position of 8th place. So just always running in the top 10. And I think he's going to be low-owned. And he's starting low enough to make him a really nice, sneaky play at $9,000. Starting 16th, I definitely see him moving his way up. He could even compete for probably not domination, but like a top 3 finish for sure. I don't know. I really like Logano and GPPs for that. And Jimmy Johnson is the same way. I really like Jimmy Johnson here. 22nd starting position. $8,800. We're not used to seeing him under $9,000. He crashed in every single possible way last week at Daytona. But that does not matter here at all. Everyone got burned by him. He was starting in the back and just got crushed immediately in the race. So people have already thought that about Jimmy Johnson going into last week. He just likes to crash a lot. But he's not going to crash every race, obviously. Starting 22nd, assuming he doesn't crash, he's surely going to finish a lot better than that. He won here back in 2016. Also won here in 2015. Does well at Atlanta in general. You see Chevy doing pretty well historically, actually. Casey Kane also has a very good history here, along with Ryan Newman and a few other Chevys. Not really seeing it much this week, although his second practice speed, very good, sixth fastest in the happy hour practice, 13th quickest in the 10 lap speed, which is all right. I just think he's going to come in massively under-owned for where he should be in this field, and that makes me like him a lot. But again, $8,800, you're going to have to, if you're going to want to be able to sneak and pivot like that, you're going to have to consider fading like a Kyle Busch or a Kevin Harvick or a Martin Truex. You're just going to have to. Can't afford all four of these guys. Moving to Eric Jones, starting 10th. Very slow practice times with him. And last year we saw that 1.5 mile tracks were absolutely not his bread and butter. Probably his worst track type. So he's quite the fade here. He's one of the easiest fades on the slate, I think. Ryan Blaney starts 26th, $8,400. He is in an excellent spot to smash here. I know he hasn't done much at Atlanta yet, but that doesn't really matter a whole lot. We know from last year he's very good at 1.5 mile tracks. He has dominated as well, averaged about 21 lead laps in any given 1.5 mile track. It's better than Chase Elliott, Denny Hamlin, Brad Keselowski, tied with Kyle Larson. I mean, he was low-key dominating quite a bit last year. I know a lot of that came at Texas with the one race he led over 200 laps, but he can put himself in a position to do that. Starting 26th, he doesn't need to. He just needs to move up the field. In the final practice, he looked very good. 8th overall in speed and then 6th in the 10-lap speeds. So $8,200 or $8,400 for Ryan Blaney, that is a good value. He's going to be chalky, but I don't mind eating that chalk at all. He's very, very good chalk right there. Kurt Busch, $8,200. Very, very, very good track history here at Atlanta, but that's about it. I remember fading him last year off of the Daytona 500 victory because, of course, everyone would be playing him off of a victory there, but he didn't even end up being that high owned, honestly, and he, once again, just another top 10 finish for him. Average finish is 7th here. Average running position of 9th. Driver rating of 97. One of the best in the field, really. $8,200. And a Stuart Haas Ford. I mean, the first two practices in speed overall didn't look great. 21st and 20th. But top 10 in the 10 lap speed. So I do like that. Maybe he's a car that could stick around for a while. Just starting 7th, that really limits his upside. And makes his floor kind of dangerous because the floor could fall out from underneath him. Anyone starting top 10 could end up with minus 20 at the end of the day. And if you have that guy on your roster, you don't win anything. Just always something to consider there. Then we're on to his teammate for $100 less. $8,100. Clint Bowyer starting at 9th. His practice times were great. He was 4th fastest in the 10 lap speeds during final practice. 9th overall in speed. He does like to crash here as well. He's a bit of a Joey Logano syndrome, but he did keep it on all four tires last year and finished 11th. I think he's going to be just the most consistently low-key, under-the-radar, nice play that we have in the Stuart Haas equipment. I like his driving acumen. I like everything about him except for his stats at 1.5 miles tracks from last year. but he can still hang. Starting ninth, though, that's just the issue. If he was starting lower, I would be more into him. But starting ninth, it's hard to pull the trigger. Alex Bowman was the guy that kind of screwed everyone that played him last week. But the only guys that played him last week were the guys that don't really know what they're doing as far as attacking Daytona with him being on the pole. You can't use his older numbers here at this track because obviously Bowman used to drive for a much, much worse race team. Now he is in a Hendricks. So his equipment is light years better. He's not going to have a 46 driver rating. He's just not. Obviously, that's going to improve. He didn't race any 1.5-mile tracks last year. So that's going to be a little bit up for debate. But Hendricks has done very well at Atlanta. They always have. And he could be a bit under the radar as well. Starting 18th is pretty good for him. He was top five during the first practice session, but came back down to earth during happy hour practice. He's just going to be a low-owned GPP kind of pivot that just gets lost in this mid-range because people aren't going to be picking guys from this mid-range. They just are not going to. They're going to be picking a few of these top studs that you need. And maybe a Ryan Blaney if they go to this range, and that's it. Then they're going to be punting to try to finish out their roster. This is going to be quite the dead zone right here, to be honest. So Alex Bowman, pretty much you would play him in GPP just as a nice, nice little pivot starting 18th, because he does have top 5 upside, I think. Then Eric Almirola, the guy I love. I love you, Almirola. You should have won the Daytona 500. You really should have. But what can you do? Starting 11th, I don't like him here. His 1.5-mile stats were pretty bad last year, to be honest. I know he's in much better equipment now with his Stuart Haas Ford. But starting 11th, no thanks. $7,800 is quite the price for him, and we really need to consider price this week. We're no longer getting him at the discount that we would last year in his equipment. It's very obvious that he is in a Stuart Haas Racing Ford. And you're going to have to pay the price for him if you want to play Almirola this year, unless he starts to struggle and his price goes down or something. Jamie McMurray, $7,600. He's starting in the 11th position, or sorry, the 13th position. Low-key really good at 1.5-mile tracks last year, an average driver rating of 90th, average running position of 10th. That's very good. That's like that's about the same as Kyle Busch last year. In fact, only three guys in this field. Only four guys in this field had a better average running position than Jamie McMurray. I mean, Martin Truex Jr. averaged a fourth place running position, which is just sick. Harvick a sixth place. Then Kyle Larson and Busch were ninth, averaged about a nine. Average running position about ninth for Larson, about 10th for Kyle Busch. And that's where you see Jamie McMurray. He was always just running in the top 10. Never leading a lap. Never even posting fastest laps. He just coasts. He hangs. He's just like Bowyer. Hangs in the top 10 all day long. You could arguably, I guess, play that in cash games, I suppose. But starting 13th, again, the floor is just not there for what you want in a cash game. So it's hard to make what to even... You know, what do you even do with McMurray? You kind of just don't really play him, but no one else will. And if he just happens to finish, like, top three, you know, he could be the super low-owned pivot GPP play, which, again, is what you're looking for this week. I don't know if he's the exact person I would attack, though, to be honest. Daniel Suarez starts fourth. He is $7,400, and starting fourth just completely ruins him. You can't play him. He's not going to dominate this thing. He is only going to go backwards. Same could be said for Ricky Stenhouse Jr. starting in sixth. I know he was quickest in the first practice, but still kind of fast in the second practice. But starting sixth, there's no way he hangs that long in sixth place. There are just too many good drivers behind him. He's going to get shuffled back a bit. Another fade there. Austin Dillon, last week's winner, looking like garbage in practice so far, but he's starting 25th, so he has that upside. I mean, this is not a place where you'd really attack him. he's been just okay at 1.5 mile tracks. At Atlanta, he's never done anything, really. But starting 25th in a 36-car field, that's pretty good for Austin Dillon. And the $7,100 price tag is incredibly cheap for Austin Dillon. So the play kind of makes itself here, even though it's not an ideal play. It's one that you're going to make with him starting there. Ryan Newman, his teammate, is starting second. He's interesting, and he'll probably trick some people this week because he was fastest in the second practice. And if ownership is going to be anything like it was in Xfinity, then he's going to be, I guess, chalk or something because, man, starting second, fastest in second practice, 12th fastest in the first practice too, so it's not like it was completely random. And he does have a driver rating of 92 at Atlanta, average running position of 10th place. He did crash last year, but he had 3 top 10 finishes before going into the 2016 season. But this is really a play where you are supposed to just fade it, but the practice time makes you think for a little bit. The track history makes you think for a little bit, but Newman's not going to lead a lap. He's not going to stay in second. He is definitely going to move back. You have to resist the temptation to fall for this Newman trap here, I think. Maybe you could take a sprinkle or two at him. Maybe the race gets shortened down, you know, and Newman just hangs up there, and him being $6,900 just so happens to afford you a Truex or something. Maybe that could definitely be the case, but I would not use any more than like 5% Newman in massive multi-entry. Just a warning there. Paul Menard, $6,800. Couldn't have had a better second practice. Third quickest in both fast lap and 10 lap speeds. Starting 15th, which seems a little bit high for Menard, but now he's in that Wood Brothers Ford with the strong Penske affiliation. Last week he was cooking. He was fast as a plate race or a plate car could be, really. This will be the first real test where you see, you know, that speed that can come out of this car, and we saw it in practice. He was blazing. Starting 15th makes you want to play a good amount of him. He's our top projected value here, even though there are guys starting significantly lower than him. He is just driving a much better car than last year, and $6,800. If you're thinking of Blaney from last year, and even a slightly upgraded, I think, version of Blaney, which is what Menard is going to be this year, if anything, he's at least going to be just even to what Blaney was. If you think about Blaney last year, $6,800 starting 15th would have been a ridiculous price tag for him. And I think it's a bit of a ridiculous price tag for Menard this week. And the ownership still hasn't quite gotten there, so you might want to use him before everyone knows about him. I love Menard this week. He's one of my favorite plays. Trevor Bayne, starting 20th, looked just crap in practice. Looked really bad. Apparently all of the resources are going to Ricky Stenhouse Jr. in this garage, because, man, you would have never been able to tell they were teammates just looking at first practice, with Stenhouse coming in at number one overall, with Trevor Bayne 30th. However, his Vegas odds are better than Ricky Stenhouse Jr., so just try to wrap your brain around that one for a second. Finished 12th last year. His average driver rating is actually almost as good as Stenhouse's. He's going to have no ownership at all starting 20th. People are going to see that and think, oh, starting in the middle of the field, but he actually starts in the back half of the field, since the middle of this field is actually 18th. So he's starting a couple of spots back from the middle. You figure he'd finish right around the middle, but man, he's going to be so low-owned for someone starting 20th that I may want to use a little bit extra Trevor Bayne, because again, anything could happen. There's more variance this week. And, you know, he's not terrible here. Not terrible. Average finish is 17th, average running position 19th. Even if he just moves up one spot at 6,700, if a guy like Ty Dillon doesn't hit or something, he could be like an amazing pivot. Because let's talk about this guy right here, Ty Dillon, $6,500. See, he's going to be like one of the obvious punts starting 28th. Stat I love to bring up, I've probably said it already so far in the year, but I'll bring it up again. Ty Dillon finished the most laps last year. He finished more laps than Truex, Harvick, anyone. He kept his car upright the entire season long, and it was so impressive. We saw him, he was okay in Xfinity. He was definitely not a world beater, but he's not driving the fastest car there, of course. He's back to his number 13 Chevy for the, basically the old Casey Mears machine for Germain Racing, which is, this car obviously has the RCR affiliation with, his grandpa being Richard Childress, obviously. So it's pretty much an RCR car with a different name on it. he was fourth overall in the first practice. I think that was one of the fluky runs, though, because he walked it back quite a ways. In second practice, he was 22nd overall, ranked 19th in 10-lap speeds. So just, average for Ty Dillon. Not the greatest at 1.5-mile tracks, really. 57 driver rating last year, but the equipment got a whole lot better. It's just like he always outperforms like his driver rating. He outperforms everything in general. Look at last year. You'd think that with an overall driver rating of 64 at Atlanta that he would, nothing special. Maybe he'd finish like 23rd, 24th, like a lot of the other guys here with similar driver ratings, but he finished 15th and 17th at Atlanta. Just has a knack for finishing with his nose up. I do like that about the guy. And starting 28th, he really does make for a smash play. And he's going to be chalky. It's just, he kind of like comes into form towards the end of the race. He can float around a little bit. And if the race is going to be shortened down, I don't know if he's like quite, I don't know if he'll be quite the slam dunk he's supposed to be starting 28th. I don't know, but the guys starting behind him are, outside of Truex, they are legitimately worse than him, so I don't see him going too far back. He's like you lock him in cash games, and you probably do use him as a core play, because you will just, at $6,500, you're going to need that. You are going to need that to get your Truexes in. So you could make a fade here, honestly, if you really want to make a really, really sharp, yep, very bold GPP fade, because everyone thinks to fade the guys up top, but really fading one of these like obvious like cheap guys could be a real pivot, because I see Dillon getting some really heavy ownership into the 30% mark, maybe higher, because I feel like a lot of people are going to be forced into this range, and there aren't a ton of plays, because look at the plays around here, you can see that all of them are starting around like 20th or so, or they're just like really bad drivers. People are going to be shoved towards Ty Dillon. They're going to see his 28th starting position and probably lock him in, as they should. But I think his ownership might get a little bit too high to where there's not much of any leverage to be gained from it. Bubba Wallace, Darrell Wallace Jr., also known. $6,300, very, very cheap for him still. Very cheap. Starting 19th, I think that could work out for him very well. When he was replacing Almirola last year in this car, he had an average finish of 11th at 1.5-mile intermediate tracks, average running position of 15th place, but I do believe that was only in a couple of races, and this was not one of them. He's never raced at Atlanta in the Cup Series before, but those practice times look magnificent. Overall, he's just a great guy. Everyone loves Bubba Wallace outside of Denny Hamlin, I guess. I think he's going to be popular because he is such a popular figure for a rookie. And he's always performed above his expectations, even in the Xfinity series. He just crushed it last year. Way exceeded expectations. I really love him as a pivot off of Ty Dillon straight up. He is starting 10 spots ahead. No, about 9 spots ahead, my bad. He's starting 9 spots ahead of Ty Dillon here, but I think he's going to finish 10 spots ahead of him in the end. I could definitely see him for fighting for a top 15. I think he does have that car that can hang. One issue I do see here is even though his quick speed, His fastest laps were very good, rating 3rd and 10th in the practices. His 10-lap speed, not so hot, 28th overall, almost towards the bottom there. I don't know if that just means that he has a hot rod off of the gate or whatever, but doesn't have long-term speed. It could also just mean that he only had one 10-lap run, and maybe he was trying some new things, or not even in the preferred lanes, or something like that. I know that in practice, the practice times here do have a strong correlation with finishing position, but you don't want to get overwhelmingly married to them either, especially when they're going to sway ownership this much. And yeah, I do think that his ownership will be moved up. I don't think I'm being the sneakiest person in the world here. I just think that compared to Ty Dillon, he will be a bit under-owned, if not considerably under-owned. And that was really the core reason behind playing him here. You could go bolder and play Kasey Kahne starting 14th. But the thing that concerns me with Kasey Kahne is that Vegas absolutely hates him. He won this race in 2014. 4th last year. Now, of course, that was all with Hendricks. He's now in the Levine Family Racing number 95 Chevy, replacing Michael McDowell's old car, and we've still only seen it at plate tracks. We don't really know how good of a car it is here. Practice times are all right. 23rd in the first practice, but 16th in the second practice with a top 10 10-lap speed. Could he be really sneaky? I don't know, but I'm not really married to him because Vegas just hates him. 250-1. He's basically a member of the field, along with Matt DiBenedetto and Harrison Rhodes, Jeffrey Earnhardt. He has the same odds as these guys. Obviously I'm not going to go bet it because no, Kasey Kahne isn't winning this race, but why isn't he 100-1 like Bubba Wallace or 125-1 like Ty Dillon? Why is he 250-1? When Ty Dillon's 125-1 and Kasey Kahne is starting 50% higher up in the field. I can't understand that. It must... I don't know. We'll definitely see. This week will be quite the... what's the word I'm looking for? It'll be a nice little referendum on how good Kasey Kahne's equipment is. And... you know, honestly, the more I sit here and think about it, the more I kind of want to play him, just with all the unknown stuff that's going on, and with people generally being off of him. And again, I don't even know if people will be off of him, because they'll see Kasey Kahne at $6,200 and go, damn. And the practice times look all right. I don't know. Starting 14th is going to still not be... he's still not going to be incredibly high-owned with Ty Dillon being right there starting 28th. People are obviously going to pour in towards him. And even they'll definitely pick Bubba over Kasey as well. I don't know, Kasey Kahne is someone that I could see being a really nice pivot. It's just, he has some things that really do worry me about him. Just a lot of unknowns with him. You know, brand new car, brand new team. Shoot. Everything about his situation right now is brand new. And he doesn't have Hendricks bailing him out. I don't know. I'm just going to kind of wait and see with Kahne. But if he ends up being like that low-owned play, as like the guy that separates people in GPP, I'll look at that and go, yeah, that sounds right. But I'm not gonna like play him expecting that to happen, because I still don't think that happens, even at a track that he's so good at. Moving down to $6,000, where we have an AJ Allmendinger. Kind of similar spot to last week, don't you think? Midfield, and like I said with Trevor Bain, not really the middle of the field. He's actually starting in the back half of the field here, starting 21st, and the practice times were good, surprisingly. Because I don't expect Allmendinger to do well here. It's a 1.5-mile track, and we know that Allmendinger is the kind of guy you want to attack on flat, short road courses. But 17th and 11th. In his two practice times, not good in the 10-lap speed numbers there. 26th overall, which is something that we are looking at here. So I'll tone down any exposure I have to Allmendinger because of that. But I'll definitely mix him in a bit, just because he could be a really sneaky, sneaky guy. And at $6,000, you're gonna need some of these guys. honestly, 6,000 and under, you're gonna need to dabble into them, because if, like, if Truex and Harvick and Kyle Busch and Chase Elliott, if they all perform as expected, then you're gonna have to, you're going to absolutely need some of these guys to punt. You're not even gonna be able to afford, like, I mean, you'll probably be able to afford Ty Dillon, but you won't be able to afford the William Byrons or even the Jimmy Johnsons of the world to get you that place differential, or the Ryan Blaneys. And you kind of really want those guys this week. AJ Allmendinger, you may. I wouldn't use a ton, but I would definitely use a handful of AJ Allmendinger this week if you're playing a lot of entries. Chris Buescher is starting 24th. He was blazing in practice, 7th in happy hour practice, but he didn't post a 10 lap speed. So I'm not entirely sure what to make out of it. The analysis is kind of similar to AJ Allmendinger, although he's starting 3 spots farther back. He's also 250-1, but man, I don't know. He, at 1.5 mile tracks, he does better than almost everyone in this 250-1 range outside of Kane, obviously, but those numbers don't matter quite as much as more, of course. But Chris Buescher, 1.5 mile tracks are generally where you're going to want to use him, maybe also at larger ovals, but at Atlanta, he hasn't done anything. Average driver rating of 45, a 24th and a 28th place finish. It's not great, but starting 24th, he's not in a completely fadeable spot. He's like Allmendinger. Use him in a handful, maybe a bit less than Allmendinger, because I'm not as bullish with him. But those practice times do beg you to show him a little bit of attention. Now, starting 17th, Michael McDowell, $5,700. His practice times are all slow. He has never done well at Atlanta. Really not your 1.5-mile guy either. Starting 17th, he is a pretty obvious fade here. Not much more to say about him. David Reagan, I kind of low-key like David Reagan this week. Starting 29th, and there's something about the number 29 that I like to attack that in fantasy, and it's sort of like a marketing thing or a psychological thing, because 29th doesn't look nearly as good as 30th when you're looking at place differential. You know what I mean, the 9 trick. Well, starting 29th, I think that's a great spot for Reagan, really. In practice, both of his practice times were 27th overall, with a 10-lap speed of 21st out of 30. 30 guys took 10-lap speeds. He came in 21st. Came in faster than guys like Allmendinger, McDowell, even Suarez and Byron and Austin Dillon. I really, really like this Reagan play. I don't know how much Reagan I'm going to be using, but it's going to be a lot more than the field, that's for sure. He's kind of, I don't want to say he's my guy, because his driver rating on 1.5 mile tracks was under 50 last year. So let's get that squared away. You know, last few finishes here have not been anything too impressive. 23rd, 32nd, 18th, 27th, 23rd. But I like his practice speeds here. I kind of like him overall. I know that his new teammate Michael McDowell may be taking a little bit away from him here, but I don't know if Michael McDowell is any worse than Landon Castle as far as that would go. Actually, I would really like Landon Castle if he was here. And maybe that would lend myself to liking McDowell's car a little bit more, be starting 17th. Starting 29th with a $5,600 price tag, I think the guys that are behind David Reagan are what make him a nice play for me. Because like Ty Dillon in 28th, he's in a good spot because we have, you see here, Chase Elliott starting 27th, Ryan Blaney starting 26th. That causes a problem for, like, your Austin Dillon starting 25th. That kind of sucks for him, because he's probably going to definitely get passed by those guys. We know they're all getting passed by Martin Truex Jr., but I like the fact that David Reagan starts behind your Ty Dillon, your Austin Dillon, your Chase Elliott, Ryan Blaney, those guys that start in the back there. He's not going to get immediately passed by those guys. The guys behind him are Matt DiBenedetto, Gray Galding, Jeffrey Earnhardt, Cole Witt. They're not going to pass Reagan, honestly. And I think Reagan is in a perfect spot to stay at the end of the lead lap and collect the lucky dog bonus. Of course, that can vary wildly, but that bonus is so helpful for your punt-style plays. And even if he just hangs where he's at, you know, guys will crash and he'll move up a little bit that way, and guys will get penalized. We see a lot of speeding penalties as well. I think David Reagan could be a pretty low-key play, and he could put up another, like, in 2015, he finished 18th. If he does that again, that's a solid, solid play, $5,600. We're going to see him in the $6,000 range this year, I guarantee you. We saw it last year, Reagan was being priced $5,000. That's just not really right for him, especially at certain tracks. So, I like me some Reagan this week. I could skip the rest of this podcast, to be honest, but I will go down the rest of these guys, even though I'm not going to want to play almost any of them. Matt DiBenedetto starting 30th. I don't want to play him, no. Ross Chastain starting 34th, coming up from the Xfinity Series. We saw him a little bit last year. We haven't seen him on a 1.5-mile track. Starting 34th, and with practice speeds of 32nd and 33rd, it's hard to know what to really make of him, but of any of these back-end guys, I guess Chastain would be the way to go, starting 34th. I know that Truex will pass immediately, but Harrison Roan starting last is probably going to finish last. So he at least has that going for him. And I could see him getting around Gray Galding, who's going to crash and blow up, and then Jeffrey Earnhardt, who's not good. So Chastain might be one of the only guys I'm targeting from like the bottom of the barrel here, because the return of Cole Witt. It's good to see Cole Witt back here, but man, where were you during the Daytona? You're my guy. You're always my guy at the plate races. But yeah, you can't really play Cole Witt because he doesn't have any speed, and he's starting 32nd, so no. Harrison Rhodes, I had already mentioned him. He is in the number 51 Rick Ware Racing Chevy, which is just a laughably bad car. You're not going to want to play him. Him and Jeffrey Earnhardt are certainly going to finish last, I would guess. The only guy I see Rhodes passing consistently, if we were to play this out in our head a bunch of times, is Gray Galding, just because Gray Galding crashes, like, a lot. That's about it. I can't imagine playing Rhodes outside of him having a survivor's chance. Now, like I said earlier, it ranked a number 3 in fantasy scoring from guys 35th and back, but I think in order to survive, you have to actually like be able to keep the pace a little bit, and I don't see him keeping the pace whatsoever. He's got by far the slowest car. Jeffrey Earnhardt starting 33rd. No, that's gross. And then finally, $4,500. Gray Galding, who is certainly going to crash. However, last year at this race, he had 11 fast laps. I'm not entirely sure how. I assume it was from him getting tires in the middle of a run. But it's kind of encouraging to see that he can even get a fast lap, let alone 11. But I'm not going to let that trick me into playing any Gray Galding, because no. Starting 31st. Now, if he was starting dead last, I might have to consider playing Gray Galding, but starting 31st, there is just absolutely no chance. So, that will do it for the Tacos Fast 40. Good luck tomorrow. Hope it rains. Hope it rains immediately so we don't just sit around waiting all Sunday for... No. I know the race has been pushed up an hour starting at 1 p.m. now, but I don't know. I still see it getting rained out and move, and I don't see us finishing this thing until like Tuesday, honestly. So that's going to be fun. Remember to play less than what you would usually play, like significantly less, because who knows what's going to happen here. I'm personally a fan of just kind of playing this out as normal, not doing anything just ridiculous, but still hedging quite a bit outside of the super, super obvious chalk plays that are going to be good no matter what. And that's my strategy for the week. Next week should be a lot more fun. We'll have a more structured and straight up race, hopefully, barring the weather, because the weather's what really messes everything up for this week. But hope it is still a fun one. Hope we can still profit. The Domination Station spit out the nuts for the Xfinity lineup as its optimal lineup. So if I can get that going for the NASCAR or the Cup Series this week, I'm going to try to set it up like that. But those tires were brutal, so maybe I might have to just save the winning lineup for myself. Sorry, guys, but I'll give you guys the second best lineup. All right, that'll do it for me. Till next week. I'm Taco. Peace out, guys.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.